It's a pleasure for me to be here today. Thank you very much. It's a kovod to be asked to speak here. And on a more personal level, this time, this wouldn't be the school holidays. I'm normally teaching boys in school, and as you can imagine, normally they would rather be anywhere but with me in the classroom. So it makes a pleasant change to have people who have voluntarily come, hopefully to have come and listen to what I've got to say. And in return, hopefully nobody here will end up in detention. We'll treat you better than we treat them. I had a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael who once giving a schmooze. He's giving a schmooze, he's saying that everyone is a product of the environment. Everyone gets influenced by their circumstances. And he's giving the moshel of a nursery school teacher. A nursery school teacher, she taught three, four-year-olds every day. She spent her day teaching young children. And her friend once said to her, do you find that it influences your life? Do you ever find you have maybe an immature outlook on life? You're dealing with young toddlers all day. Maybe it changes your behavior in any way. So the teacher says, nah, not at all. I can compartmentalize. School is school. Life is life. Doesn't affect me in any way. Later on, the friend asks this teacher, he says, what's the time? He says, can't you see? The big hand's on the 12 and the small hand's on the 4. Old habits die hard, but nevertheless, I hope we can end up here today without anyone being sent to the headmaster's office. The reason I mention this is the shiny that I would like to discuss today actually arose as a result of a conversation that I had with a boy in school. And I'd like to preface that even though I'm going to speak about something which is very much halacha lemaisa, this is an inyan of choshe mishpat, of which I do not have expertise, and I'm not here today to give a psak halacha. What I am here today to do is hopefully enlighten and to shed some light on the shaila that hopefully we can approach a psak. But actual psak halacha, as they say, I'll leave it to your local Jewish Orthodox rabbi. I can not give you a psak. So the shaila is as follows. I don't know how many people here are, have a look at the word over here, numismatics. Anyone here numismatic? Does anyone here even know what a numismatic is? Now I'll tell you. A numismatic is someone who is an expert in coins. Yeah, very good. I didn't think you were going to be here. Someone who's an expert in coins. And it might surprise you to know that there are many boys in school, 13, 14-year-olds, who are actually numismatics. How does this come about? I'll give you a brief general knowledge lesson. If you look at the coins in your pocket in England, most of the coins in England, the 10 pence, the 5 pence, the 1 pence, the 2 pence, they are normal standard issue. All the coins are the same, all the 2 pence are the same. They might tinker with the design every couple of years, but essentially all 10 pences, all 5 pences are the same. However, if you look at certain coins, and namely if you look at the 50 pence coin, and if you look at the £2 coin, even though on the whole most of them are standard issue, the Royal Mint issues from time to time commemorative coins to mark an anniversary or to commemorate a date. They issue coins which are not the standard coins, and they have different designs on them.
50p,
like that, as you said, yeah, like the 50 pence. These are issued in limited numbers, and therefore it's become a hobby, whether amongst schoolboys, whether amongst collectors, to try and get all these 50 pences, to try and get all these £2 coins with all the different designs. In fact, you can send off to the Royal Mint, they'll send you an album, and you can try and fill your album with all these different coins. Now these coins, some of them are more severely limited in numbers than others, and therefore, in order to complete your collection, people are willing to pay above the face value. They're willing to pay for the 50 pence, more than 50 pence. In school, 50 pences, they exchange hands for £1, £1.50, £2 can go for £3 or £4. Above their face value, people want to get these coins, and therefore, people are willing to pay more than it actually says on the actual coin. And I've got some surprising news for you. There's one particular coin. It's the Kew Gardens 50 pence. That is straight away when I like to give the share. When I spoke to people on Yom Tov, I like taking people over the Shaila on Yom Tov and Shabbos, because then the first thing they do, they're not digging around in their pockets. Yeah, but here it's weekday. We'll have a value at the end. People will go through your money. We'll tell everyone what it's worth. But there's one particular 50 pence, the Kew Gardens 50 pence. This was minted in severely limited numbers, And as a result of this, this cube got 150 pence. I've got the news for you. If anyone's got it, it's worth £40. If you look on eBay, it's freely being traded. This 50 pence coin is being traded at £40. It's worth £40 to a collector, to a schoolboy. It's worth not just 50 pence, it's worth £40. So I was discussing this with the boy, and I said, how do you get your 50 pences? Very simple. I said, why don't you go and take two 50 pound notes, go to the bank, say you want it in 50 pences, you'll get 250 pences, look through them. Obviously, if you look through your 50 pences, you're bound to end up with one or two rare ones. He says, he don't know anything. He says, the bank's in it on as well. All the tellers there, they all know the rare ones. There's no chance of going to a bank and getting a rare 50 pence. As soon as it comes in, they take it, they replace it with a standard one, no chance. Vayihi ayom, Yom Tov in the Voch comes up to me, he's got a Kew Gardens 50 pence. Wow, look at it, he said. Went to the shops, I bought something, this came in my change, and that's what I got. Here's his golden ticket, he got this Kew Gardens 50 pence, it's now worth to him £40. I was amazed, well done to him. Later on, I was speaking about Chavrus in Koilo, and we were discussing this, and we thought that maybe there could be a halachic problem that arises out of the situation. And if we can give a moshul, if I would owe someone £5, I owe him £5, and I pay him, and by mistake, when I pay him, instead of giving him a £5 note, I hand him a £10 note, for whatever reason, maybe it was dark, maybe I'm not an expert on the currency, I'm from abroad. I gave him, instead of giving him a £5 note, I meant to pay him £5, but I gave him £10. He also didn't realise, and he took it. I didn't realise the mistake, he didn't realise the mistake. The next day, this fellow puts his hand in the pocket, he sees it's a £10 note. I think we can all agree that it's incumbent upon him to give it back to me, this £10 note, or give me at least £5 back. Why? The fact that I willingly gave him this £10 note doesn't mean anything. It was a toss. It was a mistake. I gave it him on the assumption that this was £5. It wasn't. It was £10. So here as well, we have the same shaila. When you went to that shop, when you bought your can of Coke or whatever, and it cost 50 pence, and you gave a pound, the shopkeeper, or let's call it the shopkeeper, if it's an assistant in the shop, it might be in a different shaila, the shopkeeper hands you 50 pence, under the assumption that he was giving you 50 pence. Little did he realise he wasn't giving you 50 pence, he wasn't giving you a 50 pence, it might be a 50 pence coin, he was handing to you a £40 coin. Comes to shaila. Do I have to give it back? Have I got any right to keep it? The same way as, let's say, the shopkeeper, if he owed me £5, he gave me £10. If he would hand me £10, of course we would agree this.
Let him finish.
We assume there's a difference. There's another half an hour to the shiur, so if it would be the same, we would stop here. The same way as if you would give me £10, I would have to hand it back. He didn't hand me £10, he handed me £40. Therefore, is it incumbent upon this boy? What's the fate of this poor boy? Can he keep his Kew Gardens 50 pence, or does he have to give it back to the shop? So I can see, I can...
We know the difference,
just to... Okay, he says 100 lines. Okay, sorry, I can...
100 lines.
Just as you do make a good point, a valid point, if it would be a goy, it would be completely different. Shaila, it would be Shaila of a Shavas Aveda. Shavas Aveda to a goy is completely different. Now, Lochos Pashas, you wouldn't have to give it back. But to make it simpler, you went to a kosher shop. There are various kosher outlets available in Manchester. I won't mention any names. Therefore, that is the Shaila. So I see, what's the tutting over here? What's the furrowed brows about? Right.
The Bank of England, they only give you 50p.
So this shaila, pardon? Oh, correct. Right.
That's not true. That's not true.
So this shaila is based on the assumption, as you're all right, is based on the assumption that this coin isn't just the 50 pence. This coin is worth £40. Now, when I spoke to the shaila people over Yom Tov, that was always came back the first timer. It says on it 50 pence. It's legal tender 50 pence. Its face value is 50 pence. Where does this £40 come along from? So I spoke to someone, Dainen Choshen Mishpat, and he says, you're right, of course it's legal tender for 50 pence, and of course its face value is 50 pence, but so what? This does not exclude its value to a collector or to a schoolboy of being £40 as well. And I'll give you a very simple moshul. Anyone here, we know the musug of, we know of collecting stamps. Every stamp that's worth thousands of pounds was not issued as a stamp worth thousands of pounds. It was issued as a regular first-class stamp, however much it was, 50 pence. Are you going to say that, therefore, this stamp, if someone damages it, if someone steals it, if someone takes it, is only worth, it says 50 pence in it, so what that it says 50 pence? As a stamp, it's worth 50 pence. As a collector's item, it's worth 1,000 pounds. It's very possible for something to have two values. If you think about it, every antique item, let's talk about antique candlestick, it's got a value as a candlestick, which could be a pound. It holds my candlestick. As an antique, it's worth £5,000. The fact that something's got dual purpose, the fact that something's got two uses, does not necessarily mean that it only has the more common use, it only has the lower value. So here you're right. As a 50 pence to use in a transaction to buy a can of Coke, it would only be worth 50 pence. But as a collector's item, it would be worth £40. But with a proviso, you would all be right, to say that it has to be a readily available market. If it would be some sugar in China who would give you money for that, that wouldn't be considered market value. So I checked up. If you look at eBay, which unfortunately we would say is a readily available market, currently there are 30,000 entries for 50 pence in England. Yeah? So if you have eBay, which is a regularly available marketplace, and you have 30,000 people who are dealing and trading these coins, this is not a niche market, this is a common available market, and therefore the price of this coin is £40. And so to say, if you enter a dealer's house and you stole this coin, or you damaged this coin, you could not just give him back 50 pence. The price of this object is £40. So if you will agree with me that we have established that this coin is worth £40, now comes back our Shaila, we know there's no way the shopkeeper, unless he's an extremely jealous person, unless he'd be moichel, which is unlikely, you can assume that he would do, he gave it to you by mistake. Therefore, are we allowed to keep the coin because he gave us 50 pence, or do we have to say, he mistakenly gave you £40, had he known he was giving you £40, pardon? Because had he known this was worth £40, he would never give it to you. Because he doesn't know. He doesn't know. We'll come to that.
The question comes even more. If the person has given it to you and he's made a mistake in the value, later on he found out.
The fact that he doesn't know what he's got. If I've got a painting on my wall, which I think is a copy of a Renoir or something like that, and I've got no idea what it's worth, that does not give you any header to come and take it for its lower value. The true value, I do not have to know how much my items are worth. I have a coin here, I have a rare stamp, I have something that's worth £40. The fact that I don't know about it, the same case with the £5 note and the £10 note. I'm from China. I don't know. I can't read English numbers. I think this is a £5 note. I gave you the £10 note. I gave it willingly to you. I didn't know it was a £10 note. What difference does it make? The fact that I don't know about it, its intrinsic value is £40. The fact that I don't know about it, it might not be my bad luck. That's my deficiency in knowledge. That does not mean that you can just take it.
So what? It still becomes a
value. People ask me a similar question. They say, let's say you've got someone who's selling scratch cards. You know, scratch cards in the lottery. Are we going to say, if I walk into that shop and I buy a scratch card and I win the jackpot, then we say, had the shopkeeper known that this was going to be the winning ticket, he would have never sold it to me. I think there's cholok b'yosoi. Why is it cholok b'yosoi? It's completely different. There he sold it to me on the basis that it could be a winning one. Here he made a mistake. He didn't know that it could be that in his till he has a coin worth £40. There was I don't even remember, but a number of years ago. Pardon? What? Why doesn't he know? Did anyone here know there was a Kew Gardens 50 pence worth £40? Look in your pocket now. You might have one. Yeah. Do you know?
I guarantee you.
Yeah.
one.
Yeah, you might have one. That's why most people don't know. As we said, most people here are not new to statics.
I have to go to a house clearance and give an offer for the whole house. That's an actual
is a good and expensive item. Then we'll come. It's very how to value items. And you've got dealers who come into people when they come to little old ladies and they go and take paintings off the wall. It's very. It all comes under the same umbrella as this.
I just to give it back.
Exactly. In the case of the scratch card, it's obvious that there is completely different China. There's no shyness to our China. There you sold it under that understanding. I remember, if you remember a few years ago with Coca-Cola, they used to you could buy a bottle of Coke and you looked under the lid and there could be a prize you could win. I think it was tickets to the World Cup final or something like that. There, if you buy this bottle of Coke, no one's going to say he would have never sold you this bottle of Coke if he knew it was a winning one. That's understanding. He sold it to you on the basis of that. I remember there was once a shiny in Eretz Yisrael, in Bnei Brak, someone made the simcha.
7 Up.
I had a story with Coke. Yeah. Okay. Same company. Someone made a simcha, and there was a guest at the simcha. He opens up the Coca-Cola bottle. Lo and behold, he's got the winning lid. He looks in the lid. He's got the winning ticket. He's got the winning thing. So he says he wants the prize. Gets a tap on his shoulder from the Baal Simcha. Give the lid to me. It belongs to me. You came here. You're my guest. Doesn't belong to you. The Baal Simcha gets a tap on his shoulder from the caterer. He said, I provide a simcha. It doesn't belong to you. Yeah. There's a shaila who it belongs to. But I think Kula Alma Moida. That it doesn't. There's no shaila. That no one's going to say it belongs to the person who sold the bottle of Coke to the caterer. It was sold under that understanding that it could be a winning lid.
The answer. Then,
I think the biggest shaila is what a younger man in Bnei Brak wants a World Cup final ticket. But that's a separate point. See, here as well, if we've established that this coin is worth £40. And I think if it's a readily available market, it is worth £40. And if we can also agree that if he knew it would be worth £40, there's no way that he would hand it over, comes along the shaila, what's the fate of this 50 pence? What's the fate of this boy? Does he have to give his, well, I wouldn't say hard won, 50 pence, does he have to give it back to the shop or can he keep it? There's a Gemara in Elu Metzias discussing the halachos of Shabbos Aveda. The Mishnah there says, and Chof Hei on the base says, Motza Begal Ubekoisal Yoshon Hari Elu Shaloi. If someone's walking past a wall, an old wall, and he looks inside and he sees something hidden there, a piece of jewelry or something like that, he's allowed to keep it. There's no Chiyuv HaShavas Aveda. Explains the Gemara, why is there no Chiyuv HaShavas Aveda? Says the Gemara was speaking about in a case where this piece of jewelry or whatever it is extremely rusty. It's been there for many, many years, hundreds of years, in fact. We're talking about the case in Eretz Yisrael, and because it's so rusty, you can assume that it's been in the wall from even before when the Yidden entered Eretz Yisrael. This piece of jewelry one can take on belongs to a goy. There's no chiyuv hashavas aveda, and therefore you are allowed to keep this piece of jewelry because it's been there so long. There's no chiyuv hashavas aveda. And so says the Gemara. The Rishonim, Tosfos, the Rosh, the Modcha, everyone, they all ask. They say, Bishloimer, there's no Chiyuv HaShavas HaVeda, and therefore one doesn't have to call out, one does not have to give it back to its original owner. But nevertheless, why can the passerby, why is he allowed to keep it? We know there's a principle, Kinyan Chotzer. That even if I need to buy something in the shop, I have to make a kinyan. I have to make a kinyan hagbor. I have to lift it up. There's another way one can be kinyan of something. Anything that enters my rishus, anything that comes into my domain, there's a kinyan chotzer. If I'm sitting here now, I'm giving this drosha now, and the postman is posting a letter into my house, I'm not making any kinyan hagbor on that letter. Nevertheless, the fact that it enters my house means I'm kinyan. More than that. Kinyan chotzer words sheloi midas. I don't know if the postman is now posting that letter through my house. But nevertheless, even though I don't know about it, even though I'm not there, even though I do no maisa, I do absolutely no action, nevertheless, kinyan chotzer works sheloi midas. I am kind of that letter. So it's ask Tosfos and the other Rishonim. Why can the passerby keep it? The owner of the wall, the Jewish owner of the property, in whose wall this piece of rusty jewelry is hidden, he should be koinu it because of kinyan chotzer. It might not belong to the original goy, but why does it belong to the passerby? It should belong to the person whose wall it was found. He should be koinu it. Say, closest, velikni lei chatzeroi. His chotzer should be koinu for him.
The challenge is, was 100 years ago, though.
Yeah.
So obviously, because we're new owner now, at the time it was put there. So
now. King of Chotzer has got the act of it. Now it's in my Chotzer, when I bought it.
It's passing by. It's passing by, but somebody owns the house, put it out.
Yes, the original goy was Miyayev. When I bought this property, hundreds of years later, why am I not, when I bought this property, and anything in it. Yeah. Says the Rosh as a modcha, they say a remarkable chiddush. They say that kinyan chotzer, even though we say it works shaloi midas without knowing about it, it has to be something that can be reasonably expected to be there. If there's no reason for me to dream that it would ever come there, there's no possible rhyme or reason why I should think this thing should be there, Kinyan Chotz does not work. It's reasonable for me to expect that a postman should deliver letters to my house. It's not reasonable for me to think that there should be a secret piece of jewellery hidden in my wall. And therefore, even though Kinyan Chotz works, Shaloi Midas, it does not work in a case where there's no rhyme or reason, there's no reason that I should think it should be there.
And the letter which comes into your house, which you didn't know it would be, you have no doubt.
Yeah, but I know generally, you will see, I know generally letters come and that would be good enough.
This letter which tells you you've won £50,000, mm-hmm. You didn't expect that.
Yeah, but letters in general, it's good enough. We'll see later on. Yeah, if I generally know letters are good, it's okay. But I don't know about secret jewellery hidden in my wall. And but did he have a uvda? You won't believe this. The last sukkahs, I was in my parents' house in Golders Green. And my six-year-old son says, Daddy, I want to do something. He says, actually, you know what I'll do? I'm going to dig for buried treasure. I'm going to dig for buried treasure. So he goes outside. True story. He goes to the flower bed in front of my parents' house. Starts rooting around with a stick. I was inside. He says, Daddy, come back. I found something. Comes back. He found, believe it or not, an old half-crown. Yeah? He found an old, rusty, old half-crown. I couldn't believe it. You know, he says he's going to find buried treasure. Yeah, a six-year-old's got a Emunah Pshuta. He says he's going to dig for buried treasure. He wasn't surprised. Of course he's going to find buried treasure. He found this old coin. Now, the shaila is, who does this coin belong to? Does it belong to my father? According to this Tosis, according to the Rosh, and according to the Mosra, it would not belong to my father. It was found inside his chotzer. So for those, I don't know when destinization came about, but we can presume that this coin had been there 40 years ago. This was before this property ever belonged to a Jew. It did not belong to my father. My father was not coin of a Kinyan chotzer because he never dreamed there would be a half a crown hidden in his flower bed. And therefore, it does not belong to my father. Who does it belong to? It might not belong to my son. It might belong to me, a Matthias Cotton, but it definitely doesn't belong to my father. Yeah, it was my son who found it. It might belong to him.
You go to a farm and find Matthias.
You
have to share it.
Yeah, but halacha lemaisa, that might be English law. But halacha lemaisa, and I should point out, we pasken halacha lemaisa that Kinyan Chotzer only works, it's a Ramon and Rach Samaches. Kinyan Chotzer only works where you could think that possibly it might be. But if it's a buried treasure, where there's no rhyme or reason to think it would be there, I'm not koina. The Matzah brings this Tosfos, and he says a remarkable addition to this halacha of Tosfos. There was a case as follows. There was a Yid who had to fix his roof, who had a hole in the roof, so you need to buy some lead to repair the roof. So he goes to a goy, and he buys a lump of lead from this guy to fix his roof. And he's hanging around, doesn't get on with it. I'm sure his wife's nudging him, fix the roof already. But meanwhile, his friend comes up to him, says, I need to fix my roof. Can I buy that lump of lead off you? He says, yeah, I'm not getting around to it anyway. And he goes and sells the lump of lead to a second yid. This second yid is more, I guess, on with the job. Takes this lump of lead, starts dealing with it. He realizes this is not a lump of lead at all. This is actually gold covered in lead. So obviously what happened, news gets out. So the person who bought it off the guy, the person who said the second Jew, he comes knocking at the door. I want this lump of gold. I sold it to you as a lump of lead. I never dreamed I would sell you a lump of gold. I want it back. This Shaila came to the Beis Din, to the Rav Yor's Beis Din. The Rav Yor. The Rav Yor in Tosfos Rishon. Says the Rav Yor, the same way as Tosfos says, that Kinyan Chotzer only works if I could possibly think that this would be an object in my Chotzer. He says, every Kinyan that you make, a Kinyan Hadbor, the simple act of lifting up from Kinyan, only works if you know what you're being Koina. He says, if I think I'm being kind of object A, and really I'm being kind of object B, that kinyan is null and void. That kinyan is worthless. So says the Rav Yoh, this person does not have to give it back to the first yid. Do you know why he doesn't have to give it back to the first yid? Because it never belonged to the first yid. When that first yid lifted it up, he did the kinyan with a premise that this was a lump of lead. He never dreamed it was gold. Therefore, he never owned it. So of course, he'll have to give it back to him. It was never his to give back. Says the Rav Yoh, he is allowed to keep it, and the second Jew can keep it. He doesn't have to give it back because it never actually belonged to the first person. And he brings other cases. He says there's
the first person.
Part of it was a goy. He says it was a goy.
It's
a goy. Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it depends if you knew about it.
The lead roof, some of them got silver in, so it's not such an uncommon thing.
Well, I'll say, I'll come to that. Avodah speaks to that. But he brings other cases. There was a case of a geir that died. The geir died, he had no relations, he had no yorshim. So we know if the geir dies, he's got no yorshim, he's got nothing. All it's kol hakoyim zocher, it's up for grabs. Someone came along, says a Talmud from Yeshiva came, and he took this geir's belt. A few weeks later, he realized that hidden inside this belt was gold. The geir had hidden gold inside the belt. I think it's the Avi Ezri says, run, go and make another kinyan on that gold. Why? Because when you picked up the belt, you had das, you had intention to do a kinyan on a belt. You had no intention to be coin of gold. Therefore, if you would not do another kinyan of gold, and someone else heard about this and quickly took the gold, he could take it before you. Run and go and make another kinyan of gold. Why? The same principle. You are only coin of something which you have intention to be coin of. If you are coin of something under the presumption that it's made out of lead, and really it's gold, you are not coin of. If you want to be coin of a belt, and there's gold hidden inside, you are not coin of this gold because you have no intention for it. This halacha is brought in Ramah in Choshe Mishpat, Reish Lamed Beis. He says, "Kona hasaros l'dovah b'cheskes bedil." If a metal merchant, he buys something chazaka that it's a regular metal, and he sells it to something else, and we know that later on it's gold or silver, you don't have to give it back to the scrap merchant. You don't have to give it to scrap metal merchants. Why? Because he never owned it. Because when he did a kinyan, he thought it was lead. He never knew it was gold, therefore you can keep it. And the fact that Avodah Goshuni, the Kiva Eger, the Shuvah, they bring a case, someone bought a plate, a Halacha Lemaisa, someone bought a plate, they thought it was lead, it turns out it was silver. He says, you don't have to give it back, it never actually belonged to the first person. What's this got to do with us? In the same way we can say over here, we had a Shaila, does this boy have to give this, so to speak, £40 coin back to the shopkeeper? Because the shopkeeper never intended to give him this coin worth £40, he intended to give 50 pence. If we use this sfora, do you know why he doesn't have to give it back to the shopkeeper? Because it never belonged to the shopkeeper. When the shopkeeper received this 50 pence, and he put it in his till, and he did his kinyan, what did he think he was being coiner? He thought he was being coiner 50 pence. But that's not true. He was being coiner a Kew Gardens 50 pence. He was being coiner, so to speak, a £40 coin. Therefore, the kinyan, if we use the sfora of the Motzko, the sfora of the Ramon, the sfora of Toysas and the Rosh, he would never own this coin. If we use this sfora, if it's applicable, we could say in such a case, the 50 pence never actually belonged to the shopkeeper, and therefore the boy is in full right to keep it.
Yeah,
that would be, yeah. I'm saying it's not halacha l'maisa. It decides what has the staff got rights there.
The case of the
wall,
they can
see. Yeah.
When it's his personal
but the
knowledge of the shah, yeah. of an available shah shop.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's not really a dinner because one is loishkiah, and therefore you can use your same place. And there, it's his personal.
But the motzka takes the motzka extends it to say, I always need to know what I'm being koina. I always need to know what I'm being koina. Here, I did. Pardon, answer.
You've established right at the beginning of this year that eBay creates a shah shop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only a personal lack of knowledge.
Yeah. I think the Kew Gardens 50 pence is extremely rare 50 pence. I'll say it's really low shia. No, are selling 50 pence is not the Kew Gardens 50 pence, but yeah. Yes. But he didn't know. Even if it was very common, let's say it would be very common for people to sell lumps of gold covered in lead. But I didn't know this was a lump of gold covered in lead. It wouldn't help me because I did not know what I was being coiner. I have to know exactly what it is. But there could be another chiluk. I've started very late, so I'd like to make another chiluk. There's a sefer called Mishpatei HaSholem from Harav Spitz from Bnei Brak. So I think it's 4 or 5 volume sefer. He's got very interesting halacha lemaaseh shailas and choshen mishpat. And he's got there the following shaila. He says someone was going through Seamus, and I think we can all agree that anything put in Seamus is hefka. People there are completely hefka. And he found in Seamus an old Rambam, an antique Rambam. Took it out, coined it, looked at it, yeah, seemed about 300-400 years old. Very happy with his find. Doesn't know why I put it in, someone else put it in there. Doesn't make a difference. This is hefka. It now belongs to him. He takes it to an antique dealer, a Sforan dealer, and he looks at it and says, yes, you've got a valuable Rambam here. I will give you, and these numbers are made up, I've got no idea the real-life price of an antique Rambam. He said, let's say for sake of argument, I'll give you £1,000 for this 400-year-old Rambam. The person, what a bonus, you got this Rambam, you never paid anything for it, gives him the Rambam to the seller, to the antique Sforan seller, he takes £1,000. A few weeks later, this antique seller, he's going through the Rambam, looks through it, and he realizes that in the notes of, I think this is a true story, he looks through the Rambam, he notices on the side of the Rambam, there's various kisvei yodas, there's various notes. He looks at the front, he sees the signature, he does more research. This was not stam, an antique Rambam. This was the Ramah's Mishnah Torah. This was the Rambam that the Ramah used. Now, if a regular antique Rambam is worth £1,000, let's say the Ramah's Rambam is now worth, let's say, £10,000, £20,000. So obviously, word got out, the original person who took it from Hefka comes knocking on the door, says, I won't give me my Rambam back, here's £1,000, give it back to me. I never sold it to you knowing it was the Ramah's Rambam, I thought it was a regular Rambam. The fellow who bought the sefer, Chevroman, he obviously went to the shir. He knew the halacha. He says, what do you mean? What about the modcha? He says, what a modcha? What are you talking about? He says, when you did hagbah, when you took this out of Seamus, you thought this was a regular Rambam. You thought a regular Kenyan, you did a regular Kenyan antique Rambam. You had no idea that this was the Ramah's Rambam. Says the Ramah in Reish Lamed Beis Chosh Mishpat, one has to know what you're doing a Kenyan on. Therefore, I am not giving you this Rambam back, because I'm not giving it back. It never belonged to you. Here, take your £1,000. The whole thing was a mistake. Take your £1,000. I'm keeping the Rambam. It never belonged to you. That was the time.
He
what?
Wouldn't he just do value for him?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It could be a mistake. Yeah. So let's say, we're speaking of a case where he didn't value it. It's just, he was his mistake in the first place.
He didn't come to valuation. He came to train the Rambam. He bought the Rambam, and he wrote the Rambam as a normal Rambam.
It wasn't. It was quite in a case. Let's say he didn't come. He wasn't incumbent upon the dealer to value it. That was a shame. This Rav Spitz, he wants to say that it's choluk b'yosoid from all the cases that were spoken about so far. He says, in the case where he picked up the Rambam from the Seamus, he saw an antique Rambam over there. He picked up the Rambam, I am now doing a Kenyan on a Rambam. This Rambam now belongs to the Ramah. Is this no longer an antique Rambam? It's still an antique Rambam. It so happens to be that this was once used by the Ramah. But by Yesoid, we can say it's still an antique Rambam. If we look through all the cases of the Modcha, a lump of lead is not a lump of gold. A belt is not gold. In the case of Avodah Sagrashuni, a silver plate is not a lead plate. They are two distinct, different items. Says the Rav Spitz over here, that over here, when I did a Kenyan on the Rambam, I did a Kenyan antique Rambam, today that I know that this Rambam belongs to the Ramah, it's still an antique Rambam. The fact that it belongs to the Ramah doesn't change anything in regard to my Kenyan. If, and he gives an example, let us say that it wasn't found out that the Rambam belonged to the Ramah. The dealer was flicking through it, and inside the Rambam, he found a page of Kisvei Yodos, he found a manuscript belonging to the Ramah. Or let's say he was examining the binding. We know old Sforim, they used to bind the Sforim with even older Sforim. It could be that these older Sforim were worth more than actual Sefer. In such a case, he would be right, the dealer, that he could keep that page of manuscript, or he could keep the binding. Why? Because when the person did the Kinyan on the Rambam from Seamus, he did a Kinyan on the Rambam. He didn't do a Kinyan on the page of notes belonging to the Ramah. He didn't do a Kinyan on something that it was hiding in the binding. And similarly, he says, if the Rambam was mislabeled, if on the back of the Rambam it said Chumash or it said Gemara, he said even then also he wouldn't be able to keep it. Why? I did a Kinyan on the Rambam. I never did a Kinyan on the Chumash. I never did a Kinyan on the Gemara. But in such a case, I knew it was the Rambam. The only thing I didn't know is what? That it belonged to the Ramah. Says Rav Spitz, that's got Mishnah Shalom, that's a different case of the Modcha. It's essentially the same Chepet. Essentially, it's the same object. And therefore, of course, the dealer has got to give it back to him. Just to say what he says, even in a case where there would be a page of manuscript, or there would be something hiding in the binding, we said that the dealer could keep it. It says it depends how the first person got the sefer. In our case, where he fished it out of Seamus and he had to do a kinyan on it, yes, he did a wrong kinyan. He did a kinyan on the Rambam. He didn't do a kinyan on the page of manuscript on the Ramah. But he said, if this person got it as a Yerusha, if he got it as an inheritance, the halacha is by Yerusha, I don't have to do any Maisa Kinyan. The Torah gives the person anything that he got from his father. He doesn't have to do a Maisa Kinyan. It doesn't need his das, it doesn't need his knowledge at all. So if someone gets something from Yerusha, if someone inherits something from someone, and he didn't know that his parents, he didn't know his grandfather owned this, even though he thought he was just being a regular sefer and hidden inside this was something else, then he would be able to keep it because we don't need his das. If we use the Mishpatei HaSholem in our case, I think the halacha comes out very different. I deliberately, mistakenly said before that the shopkeeper didn't give him a 50 pence coin, he gave him a 40 pound coin. That's not true. It's not similar to, in a case where he gave him a 10 pound note instead of a 5 pound note, that would be true. Whether or not this 50 pence is worth 40 pounds, at the end of the day, we can still describe it as a 50 pence piece. It might be a Kew Gardens rare 40 pounds 50 pence, but essentially the name of this item, the Shem HaFetz, is a 50 pence. So when the shopkeeper got this 50 pence, he had Havana to be coined at 50 pence. We're right that he had absolutely no idea of its true value. We're right that he had no idea this was worth 40 pounds. But nevertheless, it's similar to the case, I think, to the case of the Rambam, where he had Kavona for the Rambam, he didn't know it was the Ramah's Rambam. So the Havdel Elef Havdolis, he knew it was a 50 pence, he never knew it was a Kew Gardens 50 pence. Therefore, he, the shopkeeper, would be coiner it, even though he didn't know, he had no knowledge of its true value. We're running out of time. As people have mentioned, the question is essentially flawed. Why is it essentially flawed? Because if there's any reason for this boy to give it back to the shopkeeper, because the shopkeeper would have never given it to him had he known its true value, similarly, as people mentioned over here, the shopkeeper himself has to work out where he got it from and give it back to the previous person. So if he got it from the bank, or some of the bank freely gave it to him, or from the Bank of England, or something like that, then he can keep it. But if he himself got it from another yid, he would have to make inquiries and he would have to give it back. So therefore, we're going to run out of time. Therefore, there should be no reason for this boy to give it back to the shopkeeper, because it's just as much as it doesn't belong to the boy, it doesn't belong to the shopkeeper. As I said, I don't want anyone taking a halacha lemaisa. Check your 50 pences. Have a look if you've got the Kew Gardens 50 pence in there. Leave off with a bracha, I don't know. Mit Hashem, we should all be zeicher to find the Kew Gardens.
I don't understand, but I don't understand how you're comparing the shopkeeper to the
Rambam.
The Rambam, to the Yerusha. How are you comparing the shopkeeper to the last week? I didn't understand.